The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the DGS sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
We do welcome you in. It is the Dave Glover Show. It is a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. And it's also the crossover hour. Say that three times real fast. Coming out of the Chris
hour,
and Amy show.
Hour.
Thanks, Ron. Yeah. Which today was Chris and Brad. So here's who we've got in studio right now. In addition to our producer, Matt Pajeski, I'm Matt Pauly, Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, Brad Young, all in the house. Fellas, great to see you. Merry now 2 days after Christmas.
Yeah. We're really plugging away, aren't we?
Anybody suffering a little bit of the post-Christmas blues?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
How does it manifest itself?
Just, I don't know. It's not depression. It's just sort of
I think so.
Like, man, it came and went, and now I got to get back to reality soon. I don't want to do reality.
What about you, Paul? You got the little kids. It makes it a little different.
Yeah. So, and also we were, there's a lot of sickness in my family on Christmas Day, so we didn't have the whole Christmas dinner on Christmas Day. We actually did that last night. So it kind of, Christmas has kind of been extended out because of that, but my oldest daughter, who's 5, is still opening up some presents she hasn't gone to yet, or opening up the toys that she hasn't gotten to play with yet, and some of her favorite stuff she's with. So yeah, it's still got, we have the very Christmas spirit still in our house.
That's good.
And reality, at least from my perspective, doesn't really start until the Monday after New Year's. So we still have another, 10 days. Mm-hmm. Of living in quasi reality, so yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep the tree up for a while.
What is the appropriate time to take the tree? We generally are like January 2nd taker downers.
For me, March.
Okay,
I like that. Actually,
I love having that tree up.
Yeah, but
I love looking at it.
One of my daughters has a January 5th birthday, so since she was born, we always have a pact that the tree's down by January 4 so that, we don't mix her birthday with Christmas.
I think this year, because I can't recall exactly when my wife, who runs the house, she basically runs my life too, which is good. I need her to. I don't recall specific times she believes, like, her policy taking the tree down. However, I was just thinking about this as you guys were talking about it. Her birthday is January the 9th, and that's a Thursday. Okay, we have a couple trees. I think they got to stay up through January 9th. And then if she wants to start tearing everything down that weekend, seems to me really good timing.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Was it you guys I was talking about this with? But I know on the air, I mentioned that my grandpa was a Serbian Orthodox, and they celebrate January 6th.
Yeah, the 12th night thing.
Yeah, so I feel like, yeah, I'll just go with that.
So for people who don't know, the traditional time to take down the Christmas tree is 12th night. That's the evening before Epiphany. So that is either January 5th or 6th. That marks the day the Magi brought the gifts to the baby Jesus. Epiphany, also known as Three Kings Day, commemorates the visit of the three wise men to baby Jesus in Bethlehem. Mm. So the Bible tells you when you're supposed to take down the Christmas tree.
When did the three wise men take down the tree?
On January 5th.
I don't know. Yeah. They didn't have a tree.
I'm sure the baby Jesus, there was no such thing as any kind of return to the gift, right?
No, you couldn't just put it in the Dropbox, the Amazon Dropbox, and watch it go away.
Couldn't go to Target or something.
Can you imagine being an Amazon driver now?
Yeah.
The packages must be nonstop.
They're unbelievable.
It's the episode of Seinfeld with Newman where he talks about the letters and the packages just never stop. Yeah.
Yeah, you saw the, did we talk about this, Brad? The,
no.
Was it in Massachusetts? I want to say it was Massachusetts.
Oh, we did talk about this on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, there was an Amazon driver that just had three or four boxes of packages, and he did not want to deliver them, so he dropped them in the forest, dropped them in the woods, and a sheriff found them on the side of the road, and he's like, it's just too much.
It I felt bad because sometimes you see stuff on social media where people leave stuff out for the drivers, like a little cooler with bottled waters, yeah. or you know, maybe you go to Costco or Sam's and get a thing of chips. I meant to do that this year because I knew we would be receiving lots of boxes, and I did not do that. So that's on my list of things to do next year.
For the drivers?
Yeah. So if that's you have a nice. Delivery driver, you just say, hey, thank mm-hmm. you for your work, and you was leave it, them a bottle of water or something.
Was it you that had the garbage worker who left a card?
We got three cards. We got a card from our garbage guy, from our recycle guy, and from our yard waste guy.
Saying happy holidays yeah. sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I got the yeah. same thing.
I've never heard of that.
I got the same thing. It's taped, it's stuck into your trash can. And so we gave him a gift.
They're soliciting gifts.
Oh, sure.
And, yeah.
It's all right.
I got to call Paulie out on something here.
Oh, boy.
Listen. Were you referring to, who were you referring to? UPS, mailman, Amazon? Who were you referring to? Like, you forgot about leaving a card?
Just any delivery yeah. driver, just leaving yeah. a table out with stuff.
Well, that changed a little bit. I thought yeah. you were talking about, you know, leaving a traditional year end tip type thing. I was going to say, you know, they will be coming to your house throughout the year. You don't have to wait till next year.
Well, no, it's just a...
That's right.
It wasn't a... I did not tip the garbage guy this year. Maybe I should have. I think that's... I don't know. Maybe social pressure is pushing me the wrong way. But I see now where you put a little table out on your front porch.
That's cool, actually.
And mm-hmm. it says, you know, delivery drivers, help yourself. And you got a little basket with chips and whatever. And you got yeah. bottled waters. And they can just grab it on their way.
And no porch pirates came and stole that, huh?
No. I mean, I didn't wow. do it, but I would do it.
You got faith in humanity.
I like
people. Did you hear that?
The people are stealing everything off porches.
Hear what he
it
said?
Doesn't matter what, you know.
I didn't do it, but I would do it.
I would.
Yeah, I mean,
I've got.
Yeah, we all
I've got
would
the
do
ring door.
Things.
So, like this year, for Halloween, we did not do trick or treating in our area. We went to one of my daughter's friends, so we left out the bucket, and it was funny because I watched the ring footage afterwards. And
smart.
There was this group of kids that came up, and we had this big thing of candy, and they grabbed it all. And literally, the kid looks up and goes, "They have a ring camera," and drops all the candy right back into it.
Wow.
And it's one of I will never like post videos of kids that are not mine on social media, so I didn't put it out there. But if there was not a social stigma that goes along with that, I would have loved to have been able to show that video
classic.
To people. Yeah.
God bless America, right?
Yeah. Can't get away with stuff anymore.
No.
You
gotta be careful.
Got cameras everywhere.
It's true, man. I can't. There's a lot of things I can't do now because of all the cameras.
Do you have cameras? How many of us have cameras in their homes?
No, I live in a building.
Okay.
So they have cameras in the lobby.
Okay.
I got cameras all around my house.
Yeah. Bernie, are you a camera guy?
Yeah, we have a ring.
Okay.
But, you know, and this is related, I think, a very quick story. You know, when the culture started to change with where everyone's got their smartphone and they're recording everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about like ring cameras. I'm talking about being out in the public.
Yeah, right.
The most mundane, you know, stupid stuff. People feel, I got to record this and put it on, you know, and yeah, maybe I'll go viral. No, I don't think so. Not something that's stupid and boring. But anyway, but I noticed, you know, as someone who would keep late hours a lot of times because it was job related, you know, you leave the ballpark at 12 mm-hmm. midnight, you know, there's a place I would hang out. It's less than a mile from my home, stop and have, you know, two beers, go home, whatever it may be. And I notice all of a sudden, like people are trying to start conversations with me. And I noticed, you know, one guy would be like recording it, like, and concealing it. And they were trying to bait me.
No,
they were trying to sure. get they were trying to get me to rip a colleague
or rip
whomever. Somebody was trying to get me to just like, you know, Bernie, you can't possibly like Brian Burwell, right? I mean, this guy, you can't.
Oh.
Do you actually like him? You know, and if I had been, even if I had been intoxicated, which not, I'd never get that intoxicated where I would fall for that stuff.
Mm.
But and I'm like, what's going on here? And then it happened a couple other times, and I'm like, you know, a hardworking sports writer can't even have a beer with someone trying to, like, do a gotcha thing because they have this new toy where they can record you and, you know, put it online if you say something stupid. And I told the people around, I said, I can't come in anymore. And that may have been the last time I ever actually hung out at a non-holiday type thing where you go out with a group of people or whatever. It's like last time I ever hung out at a place for any amount of time, because it's like it's not worth it. People are always looking to get you in a gotcha moment, mm-hmm. because everyone's got to record every moment of their lives for some reason.
Yeah, it's a little, it's not a little, it's a lot off-putting. And I am totally in on technology. I love it. Right. I love all the new gadgets we get all the time. But the fact that people do feel like every interaction has to be recorded, or, oh, there's an altercation, let me get my phone out, instead of maybe stepping in and helping.
Right.
Stuff like that. It's just, it's off-putting. And it sucks that that's the way. And it's not just young people. Older people do it, too. Everybody feels like they have to get the phone out and start recording for everything.
Hey, Elon says you're now the media.
Yeah, citizen journalism. Okay. Citizen journalism.
It's the crossover hour between Chris and Amy show, but there is no Amy today. We've got Brad Young. Also, we've got nothing from the DGS, but we do have myself, Matt Pauly, and Bernie Miklas. We'll be back coming up in just a moment here on KMOX. A Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. We're back with you right here on KMOX, the crossover hour coming out of Chris and Amy. So Chris Ranji, Brad Young, Bernie Miklas, Matt Pauly, we are all coming your way. Bernie and I will continue with you all the way until 5 o'clock this evening. So, Ranj, I've realized something about myself, and it's related to you, because you're my friend. I care for you.
Yeah.
Generally,
I care about you, too.
Thanks,
man. My mic wasn't on. I was trying to say that. Okay.
Generally speaking, because for me personally, when my sports teams do something well, I love it. It's one of the best like things that can happen mm-hmm. in life outside of like family stuff.
Yeah.
So I find myself rooting for teams that my friends root for because I want good things for them. Like, I went to school in Kansas. I have an affinity for the teams in Kansas City because of my friends there, as long as they're not playing like St. Louis teams or something like that. For whatever reason, I've taken so much joy watching the Chicago Bears just absolutely stink because of you. Because of you. I don't know what it is. I don't know why, because I like you. But my goodness. And last night was just another great example of the Bears stinking it up.
What, a 6-3 game didn't do it for you?
No.
God, that team sucks. Everything about them, the entire organization. And people started chanting.
This is my favorite.
Oh, they were chanting, sell the team.
Sell the team. Yeah.
Do you know, that's now two teams this year in that city that they've been, that people have chanted for them to sell. That's embarrassing.
White Sox and Bears. Maybe some billionaires in Chicago can just buy both of them.
Well, there was that rumor about Jeff Bezos, which I don't think would ever happen. But I'd be all for it. Whoever would buy this team and put the right people in charge and let them do something. But that team is, that franchise is just, ugh.
Those are the two teams in Chicago that you have the most affinity for, right? Bears and White Sox?
Oh, yeah. Totally. I worked with the White Sox for 10 years, so, I mean, how could I not? But the organization is a mess. The Bears are clearly a mess. I think what it is you probably like my Twitter rants.
Probably.
Because you like taking part in my misery.
Yeah.
Damn it. I hate
misery,
them so much.
Misery does love company.
You know what? There is some comfort in knowing that there are a lot of other people who I am friends with who are a fan of the same crappy team. And it's like we're all in it together. So there is a sense of community when you root for a crappy sports team.
Bernie, it's remarkable the bad sports owners that exist in this world.
You know, I guess they've always been there, you know. They've always been there. Mm-hmm. We're more aware of them now because everything they do and everything they do that's knuckleheaded or stupid or just flat out wrong, you know, it really does get blown up. It gets magnified. So you hear about every misstep. But, yeah, my goodness, though, there's even in a league like the NFL where they share revenue pretty equally and there's just no excuse to be bad for a long period of time.
Right.
Everyone goes through cycles, right? You make some bad draft picks. You got to dig out. Maybe you spend your money wrong for a while. You got to dig out of that. But, you know, for the two New York franchises to be as bad as they are, I mean, it's incomprehensible.
Well, the Knicks, too.
Yeah. At least they got life now.
They have some life, right.
But Woody Johnson may be the worst owner in professional sports. Team owner, you know, if you look at the Jets under him.
Dolan's
bad. But Woody Johnson is, and you know, that story was in The Athletic. About how he's overruling coaches and GMs and he's basing it on Madden ratings. No, I don't want you to draft him. His Madden rating was only. And he's got two grandsons that have full access to the locker room. In fact, you know, they told the story, but like his grandsons just like roaming in the locker room after games, like giving players crap, like after a bad game.
Oh yeah.
So, and Woody Johnson is, I mean, he is an absolute buffoon. And the only semblance of respectability and you know, stability they had was when his brother took over, when Woody was the ambassador to Ireland, I think. Yeah, or Great Britain.
I don't remember.
Yeah, because he was away from the building. He's an utter failure.
And if you look at the system, though, and I think this is why it explains it, you've got, especially in the NFL, where you can't lose money as an NFL owner, number one. You can't lose money. Number two.
Well, really, is any professional, like any of the big four sports, none of them are losing money.
You can't. So, number one, you're not incentivized,
right.
Number one, to put the best product on the field because you're guaranteed to make money no matter what you do. Secondly, when you're talking about owners that are in that billionaires club, which, frankly, most of them are, the fact that they lose, even if they had the option to lose money, they don't really care because they're not doing it for the money. They're doing it to be in the club.
Well,
they're doing it to be in that, to run in those circles. So you put those two things together, guys, you've got sports franchises that oftentimes lack the motivation to go out and be the best they can be.
Well, I agree with you to a point, but the thing of it is, there's a lot of, and I've covered that league for a long decades, like, as beat writer, columnist, you know, in some big media markets, there are, I can't say every owner is equally incentivized. I mean, that would be stupid. They're not. But there's a lot of guys that really do want to win.
Yeah.
And they spend money and they spend it to the cap, right? Woody Johnson spends a lot of money. They're motivated to win. They're just stupid.
Yeah.
And they're chronically stupid. And even if they have a strong desire to win and what they believe is a commitment to winning, they can't help themselves. And they can't get out of the way. See, that's the thing. It's the ego part, to your point.
Exactly.
It's the ego part.
So,
you know, they're not like, well, I don't care because I'm going to make a lot of money. They do care, but they get in the middle of stuff and they basically undermine and take the kneecaps off their own coaches and front office executives. Woody's a great example of that, you know? And so if it's not them, you know, sort of having a little bit of motivation because they know they're going to be wealthy anyway. If it's not that, it's that they can't get their ego out of the way.
It's funny that in a different sport, in baseball that we were just talking about a minute ago, Jerry Reinsdorf said, it was recent, it was within the last few months, where I think he was asked about, you know, why don't you sell? And it wasn't like a contentious interview, but it was sort of, you know, you're older, you're 85, I think it is, 83, something like that. Like, why don't you just sell that team? And his response was something along the lines of, well, I don't know what else I would do. What do you mean, what else you would do? It's not, like, I get it's your team, but you understand it's a sports team is sort of a public trust in a way. Like, you have all these millions of people invested in your product and it succeeding and doing well. And for you to just be like, well, you know, it's my toy. He can if he wants to, but he shouldn't, especially if he doesn't know what he's doing or if he doesn't care to really invest in it.
I think a lot of these baseball owners, I would put the guy in L.A., Marina, the Angels owner, they're waiting for expansion because there's going to be a windfall of money when they add two more baseball teams. And, you know, Artie had talked about selling the Angels and they pulled it back. I think these owners that want to get out are going to wait for expansion so they can pocket money to go on their way out.
Also, one of the things about owners that does bother me is, you know, each one of them, and maybe not in the NHL so much, there might be some franchises, Bernie, you might know, that if the current ownership group or individual decided to sell the team, they would take a loss versus what they paid for it. But every other team, every NFL team, every Major League Baseball team, every team in the NBA, if the current owners sold their franchises, all of them, without exception, would make money on their investment.
A lot of money.
A lot of money.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Baseball's really escalated.
Yes.
Based on what it used to be as far as franchise value.
Yeah.
But there, they all have.
There's not a team worth less than $1 billion in baseball now.
No.
Which is
even
insane.
The Pirates.
Yeah. And the A's playing in a minor league ballpark have that valuation. So it's pretty crazy.
Talk about a bad owner.
So, Ron, you're getting out of here, right?
I could stick around a few more minutes.
Okay. You do whatever you guys do. I think Brad might be getting out of here. Brad, good to see you.
Thank you.
Good meeting you.
We will we'll take a break and have more of our Gas House Gang takeover of the DGS that's coming up after the news right here on KMOX. It's the crossover hour of the DGS. It's also a Gas House Gang takeover. If you're not familiar with the Gas House Gang, it is the show that Bernie Miklas, myself, Kevin Wheeler, Tom Ackerman generally do at 12 noon on all the KMOX social media channels. Now, Chris Ranji, Bernie, hates the Gas House Gang because we just take his entire Chris and Amy audience and we take
the entire audience.
The entire audience. They all go watch the Gas House Gang. It does.
Well, here's a let me give you a better option. Go watch the Gas House Gang later because it's posted.
That works too.
You can watch them. You can do everything. Listen to our show until one and then go watch the Gas House Gang.
There you go. We were talking about this a little bit during the break and wanted to bring this up. Kirk Herbstreit has been in the middle of so much controversy, and not just all. There was the thing last year where he was going at a Cincinnati Reds beat writer, C. Trent Rosecrans, about.
Oh my gosh!
It was I think it was Jonathan India and stuff
with the Reds, right? Yeah. Reds beat writer.
So, he has been saying in last year he got into it with Florida State fans. There's been other things that he has said this year. Last night he's doing the game, the Bears Seahawks game, and he suggested talking about Bears quarterback Caleb Williams. He suggested that it is still uncertain whether or not he can handle the preparation of being an NFL quarterback and whether he can be the first one in, last one out type of guy. But then Herbstreit went on to say he hasn't heard anything to suggest that Williams isn't that type of player. So the question is, why is this getting brought up in the first place?
Because he wanted to smear him, which he did, but frankly, he didn't have the courage of his convictions to just come out and say what he meant. Because he said, I think the thing that remains to be seen, only time will tell, is if he understands what it takes to be an NFL quarterback as far as the preparation. First guy in there, last guy leaving. Oh, I'm not suggesting he's not doing those things. You just did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Don't be a wimp. If you got something to say about his work habits and dedication, put it out there. And, you know, and don't tiptoe away from it. But to do a hit and run smear job on a kid like that and then try to act like, well, like I said, I didn't say it was happening, but I'm just saying, I hope he really does understand that.
You know why he's doing it? Because Caleb Williams is an easy target.
Yeah.
It's too difficult. He's too much of a coward to go after the real problem, which is the ownership and probably the general manager that don't know how to help out a young quarterback and never have. Caleb Williams, despite the flaws, and he's got plenty of them, which I think can be resolved with actual good coaching, which they have refused to give him. He's in his first year. He's on his second head coach and I think what now third offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Third in 1 year in his rookie season. You're throwing that at him, and still he's having the best ever season by a rookie quarterback for that franchise. Granted, they haven't had a whole lot of great quarterbacks, but still, you're putting up numbers that, up against everybody else who's been a rookie in that position in that town, he's done better than all of them, despite the fact he's got all of these factors working against him like a crappy organization that can't hire a good coach. Look, they had Jim Harbaugh available, ready in the offseason, and their rationale was Matt Eberflus did a lot at the end of last year to deserve coming back. Deserve? There's no such thing as deserve. When there is a guy who is clearly better and does the job and knows how to do it and checks every box you need, offensive guy, knows how to talk to quarterbacks, knows he can lead a team. He does everything you need and he's available. You go get that guy. We talked a little bit about what the Cubs did with Joe Maddon.
Right.
They were really good in 2015 or 2014. They were getting better,
right?
In 15. They fire Renteria. They go get this other guy. They go get Joe Maddon because he was available. And it wasn't that Renteria deserved to be fired. It was that a guy everybody clearly knows is better was available, so they went and got him. That's what a healthy, smart, good franchise does.
They did it twice because they just did it with Council last year.
They did it with Craig Council.
David
too.
Ross was a perfectly right. fine manager. Right. He did not deserve, I use air quotes when saying that, he did not deserve to be fired. But Craig Council is clearly one of the top handful of managers in baseball.
And in sports, when it comes to coaches, the idea of deserve, yeah, well, come on. Nobody deserves anything.
Drew
Bannister,
Jim Montgomery, exactly. For example. I came out right away and said, no, you got to hire Jim Montgomery. He's available. Go get him. And there's a lot of people saying, oh, that's not, oh, that would be mean. Oh, who cares? That would be so cold.
Sorry, Drew. It's sports, baby.
Oh, Drew's a nice guy. you can't do that to him.
The one that made less sense with the Blues, people being upset. The Blues were playing terrible hockey, and they were getting worse.
They were awful.
They were getting worse.
They were 26. They were the 26th in the NHL in points percentage. And when they were at, I think, even strength, they were scoring like 42% of the goals.
Yeah, Pavel Buchnevich saying, we don't work on offense in practice.
Right.
What?
I mean, they weren't even really competitive. And the goaltenders were getting killed because, under Bannister, they were terrible in the high danger areas. Those guys are under siege all the time.
Yeah.
They were a terrible team. And I thought it was funny when Montgomery went through and the Blues went through their first little slump, 2-3-2. It's just like, I guess it just shows that, you know, a coach can only do so much. They were 2-3-2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't 0-7.
And watched the games too. They weren't giving up 8 goals. They were playing sometimes competitive games.
Montgomery took over, even with that 2-3-2 baked in there, they're 12th in the league in points percentage. They were 26th under the other guy, and the Blues are scoring the lion's share of goals, all strengths, 5-on-5, even strength. Their goal share is above 50%. It wasn't anything close to that under the guy that was fired.
Sports is not a typical industry.
Right.
Because a sports franchise asks millions, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people to support them, buy tickets, buy jerseys, come to our games, watch us on TV, listen to us on the radio. So when you have somebody available for a position you can improve on, you go get that person, even if it feels unfair to the person who currently has the job, because that's the nature of sports, and that's how it should be. It's not like working at Centene, where a person's been there for 15 years and deserves a promotion. This is sports. So if you have an obvious improvement, you take that improvement anytime you get a chance, and you can't worry about hurt feelings.
And Drew Bannister is still cashing a paycheck every 2 weeks.
Yeah, and it sucks for him. I mean, it's great he's getting the paycheck, but it sucks he lost the job. But when there is somebody clearly better available and you have an opportunity to get them, go get them. And that was the right move.
And there was a pre-existing relationship with Montgomery and Doug Armstrong. They're very simpatico on everything. And look, sports can be dog eat dog. I mean,
it's supposed to be.
We know that in St. Louis, you know, with the NFL stuff in Kroenke. Not that it will ever cause me to say I'll never watch NFL football, because I love watching NFL football. But listen, these sports leagues and sports teams, they can be absolutely unethical, ruthless, mean-spirited, vicious. But when the people that run the franchise, they decide, well, this guy's a better coach, we got to go get him. That's not in the same category as it's like this general corruption that's in place at the highest levels in sports.
There is a reason you do it, because you can be that franchise that wants to do right by everybody all the time, and this person doesn't deserve to be fired, and I don't want to do that because that's a human being. Great. You can operate that way. But there's probably a team in your division that ain't going to do that.
Right.
And when they can get better and crush your ass, they're going to do it.
Right.
So do you want to compete with them, or do you want to be the nice guy? Because you probably can't do both.
Absolutely.
And you have to pick one.
Do you have any confidence, Ron, that they're going to get the coaching hiring right?
Very little. Bears? Very little.
What do you think about the general manager?
Before the season, I thought he did pretty well. We all had questions about the line, the offensive line. I think we were pretty high on all of the weapons. We thought, okay, he'll be able to overcome it, but the line just killed him. And the coach, I knew the coach sucked. I said it at the end of last year, do not bring back Eberflus. He's an average at best. You can hire somebody as good as him. So go get somebody better. And they didn't. They brought him back because of deserve. And look where it got them, right? So as far as them getting the next one right, I don't know. And I'm leaning toward Ben Johnson with the Lions.
He's the trendy name right now.
He's the trendy name, and he's it doesn't mean it's going to work, but and he's got a lot working against him because the franchise is stupid, so he's going to have to work in that organization, and it's tough to do that. But I feel like he's their best option. I think it was, I don't know, but it was, I but as far as them getting it right, 20%.
It was funny on one of the Netflix studio shows on Christmas Day. There's a WWE guy, CM Punk is his name. I'm not a big wrestling guy.
He's from Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess he's given sideline passes all the time and things like that. He went on the pregame show on Netflix on an NFL-produced thing and said, oh, yeah, George McCaskey has got to sell the team.
Oh, yeah.
How does the NFL feel when that's going out on their product?
Well, here's the thing about the McCaskeys. They seem to be well-meaning. They just don't know what they're doing. There's a difference between actively hurting because you are trying to save money here and there and you don't want to spend or whatever, and that's hurtful. But there's also, like, he does spend. He just doesn't know what he's doing with it.
Well, every NFL team spends. But he wasn't... Well,
on the margins, there's no salary cap for a coach. You could pay whatever you want for a head coach.
But you can also buy a first-class airline ticket.
You can also do that.
Yeah, which they don't do when they bring people in for interviews.
Oh, my God.
Which is crazy.
Throw them in the lake.
Ron, good to see you.
See you, boys.
Are you working next week?
Yeah, I'm on Monday and Tuesday.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you then.
See you guys.
That's Chris Ronji.
Love talking to you, man.
You're the best.
Bernie Miklos is here.
Best, damn it.
Yes. Everybody in here, the best, except for me. We're back with more in just a moment as the Gas House Gang takes over the Dave Glover Show on KMOX. It's a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show alongside of Bernie Miklos. I'm Matt Pauly. We're one half of the Gas House Gang, which generally we'll get back to our normal schedule once the holiday period wraps up. So if you've been looking for that and haven't found it, we're doing some different things. But here later next week and in the week after, we'll get back to our every weekday afternoon at 12 noon for the Gas House Gang. And then we replay that at 8 o'clock at night right here on KMOX as long as we don't have a game that's on. Sometimes after SLU games, we'll run it a little bit later. To get into this, Bernie, and this is something that continues to kind of percolate in the world of college athletics, and we are in such a weird spot right now as everything is being challenged in courts. And then, you know, just the other day, if you had exhausted your eligibility as somebody who had previously played junior college athletics, well, the NCAA just gave you another year of eligibility. It's the wild, wild west right now when it comes to what's going on in college athletics. Name, image, likeness is a big part of this. Jim Larrañaga, who had been the Miami men's basketball coach, right in the middle of the season, he announced his retirement yesterday. He said, quote, "At this point, after 53 years, I just didn't feel that I could successfully navigate the whole new world that I was dealing with because my conversations were ridiculous with an agent saying to me, well, you can get involved with a prospective player if you're willing to go to $1.1 million, and that would be the norm." He made the point that after they got to the Final Four, a bunch of kids wanted to go into the transfer portal or get paid money. And I think, Bernie, I think there's a little bit, there's two things for me that's going on here. A, there's hypocrisy from coaches because Larrañaga would jump from a job to another to make more money, to be in a better situation. So that's one side of it, and I'm not running away from that at all. And I guess I don't know a lot about Jim Larrañaga as a guy, but I know a lot about Tony Bennett. And I think Tony Bennett's a really good guy, and he basically walked away from Virginia for the exact same reasons. Part of me is also sad that 18 to 22-year-olds who need people like Tony Bennett in their life, they're not going to get that opportunity because Bennett doesn't like the world of college athletics. So I'm on both. Like, I have no problem with players getting paid, and I think they should get paid, and I'm glad that's happening. But part of me is sad about the way all of this is going down.
Yeah, I got mixed feelings about it, too. Larrañaga, what he said, just to amplify the quote you referenced to, he said, after we went to the Final Four in 2023, eight players wanted to transfer or seek better NIL deals. They told me they loved it at Miami, but they wanted to seek a better deal. So I can understand where that would leave a coach disillusioned. You have a, you had a good thing going, and all of these guys are going to be back. But yet they were shopping for better deals, and it's just like, wait a minute, we're a Final Four team. Doesn't that mean anything? I can understand where he says, I don't think I'm made for this world that we've entered into in college basketball. But on the other hand, and I did some reading on this, on the other hand, and this is coming from Miami Hurricanes fans, they point out that when Larrañaga, as soon as the NIL thing kicked into effect, he went out and Miami got a bunch. They signed a bunch of players.
They got to the Final Four because of that. Yeah.
With those players.
Exactly.
And the best player he's had there who's still on the team, Nigel Pack, I think is his name.
Yeah, for a K-State transfer. When they made the coaching change, he went there to make more money.
The Miami fans were saying, well, wait a minute. You know, Larrañaga or the Miami, the collective, they gave him a lot of money to transfer to Miami. So I understand his overview look at like things are out of control. But in most of these cases, the people that are telling us this, it's because, A, they've experienced hardship as a coach because players have left, even though they bought those players to come in. Now they're leaving for a better deal. So my sympathy only goes so far.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing is that, and of course, this is a predictable thing for me to say, coaches hop from one job to another. And it's gotten to the point where people are like, oh, okay, that's just the way the system works. So I think there's just a lot of hypocrisy, to use your term, for sure. But there's also a lot of belly aching that doesn't resonate with me as fully as it should, because I know the very same thing he's complaining about is something that he did to other coaches.
100%. And so, I've worked around college athletics for a long time, and I've been, you know, I spent 6 years as the voice of the Wisconsin Green Bay women's basketball program. So when I see student athletes, sometimes that's who I see, those 18 to 22 year olds. Not the 18 to 22 year old football player or men's basketball player that can go command $1 million plus on the NIL market. So I've got some biases that are involved in this, and sometimes I look at the world from too much of a utopian perspective, where I've got to get some sense knocked into me that we've got some real world stuff going on. But the only thing, again, I like players getting money. I'm not against that, but I do think college athletics is special. I do think 18 to 22 year olds are still kids. And I remember who I was when I walked into college. If you would have given me $1 million when I was a freshman in college, and I've got a pretty good head on my shoulders, and I did when I walked in, I wouldn't have known what to do with that. You're walking out of your family's home for the first time. You're being put into the care of, for athletes, very much the coaches and the coaching staff and things like that. And it worries me for the well-being of student athletes, of what's going to happen as we do see. Again, I don't apply this to Larrañaga because I don't know anything about him as a person, but that's where, going back to Tony Bennett, I was sad that man was no longer in those young men's lives.
I wish I had the numbers in front of me, the percentage of like college basketball players that actually even spend a day in the NBA. It's probably not a big percent.
No.
And I also try to take into account the backgrounds of different players. I mean, I don't know how many, I don't have a set of facts to tell me how many of them in effect grew up poor, or challenged, or whatever you want to call it. I really don't know. All kids are not coming from equal situations. It's all kinds of the whole gamut of situations. And if you have the percentages on your side where you realize there might be 10%, and I'm just throwing a number out there, 10% of all, you know, power conference basketball players are just major college basketball players, 10%, you know, make it to the NBA. If I were in a situation, I looked at it that way, and I realized, you know, I think I'm pretty good. I don't think I'm NBA good. So I'm going to get what I can while I can.
Yeah.
So I never would blame. I would. So it does turn them into mercenaries, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But there's underlying reasons for that, because that's the attitude of like, look, man, I could blow out a knee my next game, and I could lose all my mobility and quickness and ability to cut and move. Maybe I'll get to the NBA for two or three games and then it's over. If I have a chance right now to make things better for me and my family, put some money away, Provided that they don't blow the money, of course. I can understand that thinking.
And they should. It's their obligation. Right. I would say it's obligation. So it's just, it's very murky right now in the world of college athletics.
It's tough to kind of accept it the way it is. And it's like, I don't know that it should be free market. Like they are true professionals. I think it needs to be regulated to a reasonable extent.
But every time they try to regulate it, the courts say, well, this is unconstitutional.
They get sued. But it's made me jaded, not in a way where I don't like the sport as much or I won't watch the sport as much, but it's made me jaded. And I think this is where you and I are different, but at least I'm saying I'm the jaded one, where I no longer look at, when I'm talking about College Sports Inc., I just don't look at it. Education is something that to me I don't even consider. I just don't look at it. Division three, yeah. Division two, yeah. Lower levels of Division one, yeah. Because they, you know, these kids pretty much are very realistic about how far they can go. But the idea that they're going to school for an education, I think it's not totally null and void, but it's just no longer as relevant or pertinent as it used to be.
You're right. You're probably right. I hold on to something that maybe I shouldn't hold on to
anymore.
Well,
no, I respect you for that. I do. I admire that. I'm the cynical, jaded son of a gun, you know.
Fair enough. I'll get there. I'm striving for that as I get older. This is a Gas House Gang takeover of the Dave Glover Show. We're talking sports. We're talking more than sports as well. We're talking restaurants and things like that in just a moment right here on KMOX.